Hey, beautiful. This is Aminata Soul Plant Walker Firewoman, and I am the host of the Mother Tree Network, where spirituality and earth wisdom meet racial justice and women's leadership.
Hey, gorgeous. It's Aminata Soul walking with you in this circle, this path, this spiral of life. Today, we're going to be hearing from Aurora Archer. Aurora is a Texan, native-born Texan of Mexican and African-American heritage. She is a former marketing executive who stepped out of the corporate world to start her own startup and found a company called The Opt-In. She's a podcast co-host. And what I love about this interview is Aurora shares how her family, her Mexican family, her Black family, really provided this foundation of support, of love, of information about who she was, so that when she went to places and schools that were predominantly white, she had this internal wealth. And she leaned on that when she faced challenges. The other thing about Aurora that I love is Aurora has a perspective that whatever shows up in our life is there for us to grow. It's whether it's fair, whether it's difficult, whether it's racism or sexism or any of the other systemic oppressions that we face, Aurora sees it as an opportunity. An opportunity for us to get deeper, to expand, to get clear about our power. And I really appreciate that perspective. As you know, here on the Mother Tree Network, we are all about being rooted in love and standing for justice. So I'm so excited to share the story of how much wealth a family can have, even if the professions, what people do for money is not quite enough, how they can still have cultural wealth that their kids can draw on. So you're going to love this episode for that. Aurora also answers the difficult question of like, what's in it for corporate America to really do diversity, equity, inclusion work? Why it supports their bottom line? Because ultimately, that is what drives them. And I love Aurora's perspective on that. And finally, we talk about, you know, what it's like to be an entrepreneur and how Aurora's path to financial stability meant that she chose to go into the corporate world and stay there for decades so that she could provide health care for her family members, so she could provide money, so she could get them out of generational debt and poverty. So I love that she was able to do that through her work in corporate America and ultimately jump ship, left there to start her own company, The Opt-In. So this is a really inspiring episode, and I'll see you on the other side. One more thing. If you are thinking this might be a time for you to pause or rest or reconsider your social justice, I want to help you. I know things are getting hot. Things are getting crazy with the Supreme Court. There's always some kind of, there is some kind of challenge around racism in this country because this is where we live. This is what we were founded on. And this is like, it's all over. So given that it is something that we are continually facing, you know, as you walk your spiral, as you're in your life, sometimes you need to pause. Sometimes you need to reconsider. So I'm offering a webinar, a presentation called 5 Signs It's Time to Pause Your Social Justice and Regenerate. On this webinar, I'm going to give you some telltale signs that I encountered in my journey, but I did not pay attention to. And so then, of course, you know, things had to really fall apart for me to go, oh, I better pause. You don't have to do that. And sometimes you need someone outside of you to give you permission, someone who's also in the movement working alongside you, to give you permission to pause, to reflect, to really consider. And I want to do that for you. And of course, I'm going to give you some strategies for regenerate, to decolonize your justice work so that you are naturally in a cycle of renewing yourself and you're not applying, you know, the values of extraction and empire and capitalism to your beautiful, beautiful, beautiful self. So you can find out more about that on my website at dramandakemp.com. 5 signs it's time to slow down your social justice and regenerate. We'll see you at dramandakemp.com. All right, enjoy this episode. Hey everyone, welcome to the Mother Tree Network. And our special guest today is Aurora Archer, who is the founder of the Opt-In and a member of a board of directors and a woman around town. So welcome, Aurora.
Thank you. Thank you. I am so delighted to be here. Thank you so much, Dr. Kemp, for inviting me to join you in what I have no doubt will be a beautiful and loving and hopefully shifting conversation.
Absolutely. And it's so fun, I realize, to be here now because I was on your podcast in 2020.
Yes, you were.
Yes. And at that time, I had no idea, no desire to start my own podcast. So it's beautiful to see what's happened with us both in the course of 3 years.
Yes, much has changed for each of us individually, for our companies. Mm-hmm. But I think that one of the things that hasn't changed is our passion, our love, and our advocacy for humanity.
Yes.
And the quest, desire, and love for its evolution.
Yes.
And our evolution.
Yes, absolutely. That's just got, for me, that has probably, it's not that it's changed. Maybe it's just that I feel so much wiser and more whole in approaching it. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think with each year, if we are leaning into our self-awareness and our excavation and our commitment to growth, mm-hmm. yes, absolutely. It comes with, I think for me, it's come with more grace for myself. It's come with more insight and wisdom. Mm-hmm. As I continue to traverse this world, and all of its complexities and all of its beautifulness. And yeah, I would offer if we weren't changing, I would be worried.
Right. Right. Then we'd be kind of like holding on to something, mm-hmm. which is, you know, as we all know, it's a losing battle, but you know, sometimes it takes us a while to realize that.
It does.
Well, let's start with what's good. Tell me, Aurora Archer, what is good today? What is good in your life? What is good in the world? What are you thinking that's good?
I think so many things are good. I am, first and foremost, I am grateful and good for my health. I am grateful and good to wake up and know that my family is well and thriving. We just celebrated my mother's 95th birthday. That is hella good. And she is spry and bright and as feisty as ever. And that is real good because at 95, she's seen a thing or two.
Wow. Wow. So, you know, Ashe, aho, amen, amen, yes. Everything, all yes. good to your family and especially yes. your mother.
Yes.
That is awesome. One of the things, Aurora, that's interested me about you. There's so many things, but one of them is, because most of our listeners won't be able to see you unless they watch it on YouTube, mm-hmm. your background. So I know in conversations we've had, I can't remember if you self-describe as an Afro-Latina or a Black Latina, but tell me a little bit about that. And somehow that question came to me when you were talking about your mom and you were giving such honor to your mom.
Yes. So I'll start at the beginning. My pronouns are she, her. I am a native Texan. I was born and raised in San Antonio, Texas. I am the proud, proud product of Petra Patricia Gomez, a Mexican immigrant from Monterrey, Mexico, and Hugh Archer Jr., Hugh Cephas Archer Jr., may I correct, who was a Black cowboy from Cuero, Texas, and a cook. So my mother was a housekeeper slash maid. I actually don't like using the word maid, but that was her role. And so both of my parents were domestics. And I grew up, although being mixed, I grew up with a very high sense of identity. My parents had my sister and I when they were a bit older and wiser. And so I grew up with a mother who was very clear on the fact that she was an indigenous Mexican woman. She was adamant that while she had immigrated to the United States, that there was such richness and beauty in her culture. And she instilled that in me. She was extremely adamant that I would learn her native tongue. So my first language was actually Spanish. I did not learn English until I went to school. I learned all of the rituals, all of the indigenous cultures that she passed down. My mother was what we now would call an herbalist and naturopath. Anytime that any of us had any ailment, whether it was a headache or we scraped our knee playing on the sidewalk, she didn't reach for the medicine cabinet. She reached for nature. And she always had a lovely garden. And so she would go out to her garden, grab a couple of herbs and make an elixir, and really connected me to the fact that all that we need is actually provided to us by Mother Earth. And then secondly, I had an incredible Granny Archer and sister aunts, aunties that were my father's sisters, who were very clear in instilling the fact that I was a Black woman. And that while my curls, I know folks can't see them who are listening audio, I have cute, they're like, yeah, you got those sweet, cute, soft curls, but don't get it twisted. You a Black woman and the world is going to see you as a Black woman. And so that was very much instilled in the sense of my identity, as well as pride and pride in who I was, despite the fact that, you know, I was growing up in an environment where we were, you know, very humble beginnings, hella poor, and in a state that didn't quite recognize our humanity, our value, and our worthiness. Some would argue that that continues to be the case for many different identities here in Texas.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, Aurora, that is beautiful. That is beautiful that both of your heritages married inside of you, mm-hmm. and that you have as your first language is Spanish and your second language is English. And, you know, you have your beautiful soft curls and you have your aunties from your dad's yes. side affirming that you are a Black woman. And mm-hmm. so it sounds easy, but I have to ask you, have you noticed tensions between Black women and Latinas, Latinx, Latine? And, you know, how have you navigated it if you have noticed that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And so here's where, you know, I am lucky. I had the grounding and the clarity and the love from my aunties, my tias, my parents in my home. That does not mean that the world was kind. That does not mean that the world did not judge me. It does not mean that the world wasn't always asking me to decide. We live in a world that is very binary and that is usually asking us to make a decision between this and that versus how about we, it's an and. And so I also had the beauty that I never saw that strife or that conflict or separation within my families, whether it was my Mexican family in Mexico who loved and adored my dad and our family, and likewise my Black family adored and loved my mother and her Mexican and Latino roots. For me, it was more a challenge when I got into the outside world, right? As a kid, quite honestly, I didn't always fit in, right? I wasn't Black enough for the Black kids. I wasn't Latina enough for the Latino kids. Or actually, quite frankly, I was too dark for the Latino kids.
I was just going to say, yeah.
I was too dark for the Latino kids. That's the truth. And then from a white perspective, like they were having none of it. And so, yeah, that was very much, I'm grateful for the reconciliation. I'm grateful for the integration, and I'm grateful for the spiritual alignment of that truth within myself and my home that gave me the fortitude to be able to navigate what was not always kind in the outside world. Mm-hmm. You know, and certainly traversing corporate America, I spent, you know, one of the biggest things for me and my family was education was the pathway out to a better world. So mm-hmm. my parents very much inculcated that into my sister and I. My father actually, when I was going into high school, brokered a deal with one of the wealthy white families that he worked for so that we could live on top of their garage. My sister and I would have access to the right zip code, which would mean the right public school. That really was not a pleasant experience. I think there were maybe 4 or 5 kids of color in the entire school. It was a highly privileged environment. And I was not welcome. And while that didn't feel good, I wasn't there to be liked or to make friends. I was there on a mission to get an education and to leverage that as my pathway out to a different life and a different world, and which I did. And so I attended Syracuse University, went on to create over 25 years of a corporate career as a marketing executive. I had the pleasure of working not just in one industry, but in 4, started my career in retail, spent a chunk of my time in Silicon Valley in the tech industry, working for incredible companies such as Hewlett-Packard, Xerox, and Acer, then spent time in the pharmaceutical industry working for AstraZeneca, heading up their global transformation team, helping set up one of their first innovation hubs in London. And then wrapped up my corporate career in publishing and media, working for Everyday Health in New York.
Wow. Okay. Let me pause you there for a moment.
Yeah.
So you went to this public high school mm-hmm. in predominantly super, super predominantly white, where you were not mm-hmm. welcome. But you said you weren't there to make friends, or you didn't have mm-hmm. an expectation that you needed those people in a social way.
No.
You were there for your education.
Yes. And I think, you know, who doesn't want friendship? Who doesn't mm-hmm. want connection? I think mm-hmm. it's one of the core things that we as humans yearn and want. But that was not available to me. Mm-hmm. And that was made more than abundantly clear. Mm-hmm. I was the maid's kid. I did not have the right, jeans. I didn't have the right clothes. I didn't have the right hairstyle. I didn't have any of the right things. Mm-hmm. And so I think as a kid, I learned very early on, okay, focus on the mission, focus on the goal. You know, there was probably not a day that I didn't walk into that school that I wasn't called the N-word or spic, mm-hmm. Which was not pleasant. I spent many of my mornings gathering myself in the bathroom stalls of school. And so
How did you hold yourself together through that for 4 years, Aurora? What do you think?
Well, I graduated early.
Okay, 3 years.
A sister got out as soon as she could. So yeah. No. I think it comes from, the building of resilience. It comes from having a clarity of your goal. It comes from having a base of people that love you, my parents, my sister, and knowing that for the moment, that would have to hold and sustain me.
Mm. Wow. And are you the older sister or the younger sister?
I'm the youngest.
Mm.
I am the youngest and I am the chatty Kathy. I am the, wants to make friends with everybody. And so that wasn't, it was not great. But my family filled that void. My aunties filled that void. My tias in Mexico filled that void.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it was,
so
it
you
was
could
a
do
process
it.
Of, you could do it. Exactly. It was like, okay, heads down, get it done. And also, don't get wrapped up. And I think this is one of the, it gave me so many gifts. Yes, it was hella hard. And I do not want to underestimate that. And I, my heart breaks because I know that that was not just my experience. I think there are kids all over the world that are going through this experience of feeling separated, bullied, alienated, excluded. I had the gift of my family. And I had the gift of a goal. And I had the clarity through, maybe at the time it was, I don't even want to call it a spiritual practice, but I think that our higher selves are always with us. I knew that what mattered most is what my family confirmed to me that I was. That I was loved, that I was valued, and that I was worthy. My father was an incredible dreamer. And so my father would say to me, they can take everything away from you. They can take your money. They can take your car. They can take your book. But what is in your heart and what is in your mind, nobody can take from you.
Aurora, my foster mother said that to me. We might be around the same age then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because remember, there was a generation of black people who were like, they could take it off you, but they can't. She would say they can't take your education away from you.
Yes.
And
yes.
This is why she was also promoting education as a route and not so much as a social or as a place to help you be whole, but as a place for you to get skills that you need.
Correct.
So you have more opportunities.
Correct. It's a pathway. It's a pathway. It's an access point.
Yes.
That is what it was. It was an access point. It was not a social playground. It was not a place where you get validation. It is not a place. And for me, it's like I wasn't getting validation from my peers, aka the students. Mm-hmm. And I sure as hell was not getting validation from any of the teachers.
Mm.
If anything, I was a nuisance. I did not fit in the box. And I was something to be feared and to watch with a critical eye for mm-hmm. fear that I may steal, take, cheat, or do something out of what was defined as the normal box of behavior.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I see mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. I know we have a lot of educators who are in our community who are probably mm-hmm. listening to this. So you can be such an impact, such an impetus for somebody's growth and liberation, or you could just be an obstacle. Just one more thing they have to walk across, huh?
I will share two distinct experiences for educators, as folks that are your audience. My fourth grade teacher, Mrs. James. I don't even know if I can tell this story without getting emotional. She was beyond exceptional. She was an angel. She was my fourth grade teacher at Bowden Elementary on the south side of San Antonio. She was black. She was smart. She was bold. She was sharp as hell. She drove a white Monte Carlo with a red interior, and she saw. She saw things in me and the possibility of me in a way that I did not see in myself. She was one of the first teachers that plucked me out and would have me go to speaking competitions and poetry readings and writing events. And I was like, I'm not that person. And she's like, oh, yes, you are. And I am forever grateful to her for seeing me, for propelling me and modeling for me what Black sisterhood, what womanhood, what sisterhood can do in inspiring anyone around you. By contrast, I had a ninth grade high school teacher, my English teacher, who was somewhat perplexed that I had actually gotten a straight A in one of the exams. Because how could it possibly be? I'm the poor kid. I'm the domestics kid. I don't, you know, my parents don't have much more than a middle school education. How could it be? So she assumed that I had cheated on the exam and proceeded to have me take the exam, a different one, but take an exam again in a room by myself with me stripped of all of my belongings because somehow I needed to prove that I had not gained that A in an undermined way. And of course, I aced the second exam. But I don't know if that teacher ever recognized the humility and impact she had on me as a child.
Right.
Because as you know, I mean, Dr. Amanda, it's not like my parents were going to come down and argue the fact that I had studied for the exam and I was worthy of my first A. They didn't have time for that. They were out surviving. They were out getting the job done so that the lights could stay on. So I navigated that process by myself. And so it pains me to think that an educator would choose to do that. And what I know to be true, because I see the latest research, that it's still happening. That we assume things about people's identities. And we don't examine within ourselves, where is that assumption coming from? And is that assumption true?
Well said. And I do want to talk to you about your company, because I know that your company is on that.
Yes.
Is really on that. So thank you for sharing those stories with us, Aurora. I want to ask you from a spiritual perspective, because I know you and I have talked about things. I know one of the things that I've heard you say, and I'm not, this is not a quote. So let me ask you, when you look at, you know, the good and the bad, or let's call it the difficult and the really wonderful experiences of your childhood, you know, especially the teacher, the Black teacher who loved you and propelled you. And then this other teacher who really fostered a sense of doubt in you, or, you know, when you look at those experiences from a spiritual perspective, from a higher evolutionary perspective, what's the gift?
Oh, so many, right? I love that there's a quote in the book, Conversations with God. And in there, there's a passage where he's asking, but God, like, but this person did this to me and that person did that to me. And God's response is, I have only ever sent you angels. And he's like, no, but they did this and they treated me like this and they said this to me. And he's like, again, my child, I have only ever sent you angels. And so that's, for me, the retrospect of my life, is that every single one of those obstacles, every single one of those challenges, every single one of those humans that in that moment may not have had the consciousness or awareness, were just literally helping me point back to myself. They were helping me point back to my highest self and allowing me to grow and expand.
All right.
And that does not mean that the pain and what I felt at the time was not real. It means that if I can zoom out and look at my life, I can understand that nothing happened to me, only for me.
Okay. I feel like that is, it's like a yes and.
Yes.
You know, like, mm-hmm. yes, there's oppression, and yes, there are mm-hmm. systems, and yes, there are mm-hmm. individuals who are acting, mm-hmm. you know, and harming mm-hmm. people in the course of, mm-hmm. you know, working through the system. And yes, there's nothing happening to me. It's happening for me. I'm here on this planet for a reason, and this is part of my evolutionary path, all of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because when I look back at that example, what did it teach me? It taught me a clarity of advocacy for myself, because at the time, my parents, not because they couldn't or didn't, they just didn't have the time. So guess what? I had to navigate that situation with adults with a lot more power and a lot more control than me. I had to learn to stand in my truth because I never wavered, right? Despite being asked several times, did I cheat? I was adamant. I did not buckle. I stood in my truth when I knew clearly that's not what the adults at that time wanted me to say. And then third, it taught me resilience, that this too will come to pass, and it does not define who I am.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. So, Aurora, that was so powerful. You know, the lessons that you learned as a little girl to stand in your truth, to advocate for yourself, to be resilient, you know, in the face of all this. And now here you are after a 25-year career in corporate America and all these different sectors. Now I think you serve on boards of directors and you have your own company. So yes. Tell us how all those experiences from your childhood and your time in corporate America, what do you bring to those roles today as a business owner and, yes. you know, as a board member?
So one of the critical roles, because I often get asked, so why did I start the opt-in? I started the opt-in because I think that corporate America is at a moment of incredible opportunity for evolution and transformation. And I was very lucky in the sense that I was able to identify and know that I had a knack and a gift for marketing that is very much tied to the fact of, as a kid, I had an opportunity to traverse so many different identities. I was an American, but I spent my summers in Mexico. I had a Latina Mexican mother. I had a Black father. I grew up in the barrios of San Antonio, but, you know, spent time working and cleaning in the homes of very affluent white people in San Antonio. So I had this tapestry of being able to observe and watch humans across economic lines, across national lines, across race lines, ethnic lines. And that's actually what made me a pretty good marketer, is the ability to tap into the human essence, needs and aspiration. And so that gift propelled me into an incredible global corporate marketing career. And that career allowed me to do several fundamental things. It allowed me to break the legacy of debt that was generational in my family. It allowed me to break the legacy of poverty that had been generational for our family. And yet, it should not have been so hard. The environments should not have been ones that many times broke my spirit, should not have been environments that impacted my well-being and health in many moments. And so again, it's that either or that we were talking about, the ability to gain financial freedom and independence through an access point called corporate America, to change the generational, to change my family's historical generational legacy, create a new one. And I always say to people, it wasn't that the work was hard. I loved my job and I strove for such a level of excellence. And yet it was the environment. And so my impetus for starting the opt-in is that I believe that those environments have an incredible opportunity to transform and change. Because for many of us, corporate America continues to be a pathway, an access point for financial independence that ultimately helps us close the equity gap in our country. But it should not be at the expense of our souls, our well-being, and our happiness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And because I will share another tidbit, I think that we overplay this phenomenon called entrepreneurship and how yummy and fantastic it is. And it is all those things. And I remind people, it took me to this grown age to be able to have the financial wherewithal to do it. Because at 21, I became financially responsible for my parents, their mortgage payments, their health bill payments, etc. So that it was not an option for me to become an entrepreneur, let alone the fact that none of us have friends and family funds, et cetera, all the statistics that we know about. And so we started the opt-in with the mission of all is one and the opportunity to help leaders and organizations create environments where everyone has an opportunity to thrive and be their best selves. And we do that by focusing on two things. One, I believe that one of the biggest gaps in corporate America is that we are neglecting to recognize that we need to invest time and money to upskill the racial literacy and cultural competency of our employees. Period, full stop. This is not a character thing. This is a skill set, a skill gap issue. So we have to invest in the skills to learn how to navigate racial literacy, how to have a much more deeper and excavating sense of self-awareness. How do we build cross-cultural relationships? And last but not least, how do we build the stamina, the habits, the community to stay in the work of self-exploration and growth?
Define racial literacy for me, Aurora.
So for us, it really is the fact that race is historical and current. It is also about understanding the components of what are the biases, I call it, what's the hard wiring? What is the program? And how do you actually work to understand what are those biases? Your understanding, first and foremost, of your racial identity. We all have a racial identity.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that we speak the least of in this country is the identity of race. Number one, albeit is the most influential one of all the identities. And then the one that we know the least about, particularly my white brothers and sisters, is the identity of white race. Mm-hmm. 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 And so our work is focused on how do we, without shame and judgment, unpack the self-awareness and the understanding of racial identity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how do you make the argument that this is going to increase the bottom line?
So I make the argument, first and foremost, I want to share because I lived it. Mm-hmm. As a corporate marketing executive, I was responsible for a P&L for almost 20 years of my career. I will tell you, my teams never looked like anybody else's. My teams never produced campaigns, ideas, and innovation that looked like anybody else's. The level of engagement on my team was always at least 5 points higher than any of my peers. And last but not least, my team always met and in most cases over-delivered on the productivity and the P&L of both the top line and the bottom line. So I want to share with folks, I don't come to this work with that being theory. I lived it. And I offer that because two things. One, nobody lets a Black woman be in charge of multi-million dollars and a billion-dollar revenue campaign without the ability of them knowing that she knows how to hella do it. And not like hella do it, like, okay. No, she has to be excellent and exceptional. Because let's be very clear that today, 2023, less than 2% of people of color exist in the higher ranks of corporate America.
Yeah.
So my biggest thing is, like, if you see a brown or Black person in one of those roles, please don't question, because you have no idea what they took, what it took for them to be there, because we can't show up being just average. We have to be exceptional.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
let me also answer, because I think so one is, it's a lived experience that most of my career, 99% of the time I reported into white bosses, and 99% of the time my peers were white. And I never underdelivered and never underperformed. So I saw the impact of how my team that was diverse and different, how the partners I chose to work with were diverse, how we delivered on the bottom line. And I'm going to tell you, Dr. Amanda, it was not easy, because I was pushing against a status quo of who got to be on my team, who was hired, who were the partners that I got to choose. I mean, I can't tell you the number of fights I had with our procurement and supply chain folks saying, no, I understand that this is such and such big agency that we work with, but I want to give an opportunity to this medium-sized or small-sized BIPOC-led agency. No, I understand that you think that this person doesn't have the qualifications to be on my team, but they bring these lived experiences, and that's why I'm going to hire them. No, I understand that you think that I should have a focus group that only has this normalized identity at the table, and I'm going to strive for different identities to be part of the focus group, because that are the insight that we're going to find in those focus groups is going to define the product that we're going to create.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that product is actually going to deliver a greater share of market and profitability, because we are looking at the market in a much more multidimensional way, not just in what you have defined as main market, which I don't believe that to be true anymore.
Mm.
And so I've seen it in action.
Mm-hmm.
And the numbers prove out. A diverse team increases the bottom line by 38%. The data is out there. It is not hidden. It's been out there for at least 4 to 5 years by the McKinsey's, by the reputable.
I love you saying it's not hidden.
It's not hidden. It's out there.
Okay. So, and if people want to know more about the opt-in, though, because you left corporate America and you created your own company.
Yes.
Tell us about that. Why?
I created the company because I want to evolve our environments. I want to evolve our corporate environment so that we create more impact so that everyone there can thrive.
Okay. So you left marketing per se because you wanted to affect the entire environment.
I wanted to affect the entire environment because I don't want people that look like us, Amanda, to have the experiences that most of us have in corporate. And when I tell you very little has changed, very little has changed because I still mentor and mentee loads of young human beings, Black, brown individuals that are in these corporate environments that are struggling with the same nonsense that I struggled with most of my career. Mm-hmm. So that tells me qualitatively, very little has changed. And then when you look at the data, very little has changed. When you look at the level of representation across all six levels of corporate America, it has not moved more than 2% in 8 years. Mm-hmm. When you look at the funding that is being given to Black and brown entrepreneurs is still hovering at less than 2%. Mm-hmm. When you look at the back end, companies that are hiring partners and vendors that are diverse to work with them, we receive less than 2% of the supply chain and procurement dollars available across corporate America. So very little has changed. And my goal with the opt-in is to do two things. How do we evolve the humans through specific racial literacy and cultural competency skills through a learning program, workshops, and coaching? It's number one. And then once you evolve those skills, taking my commercial and marketing background, we actually do product and service sprints where we examine specific areas of your business so that it is much more representative and inclusive. And I'll give you an example. I led innovation teams most of my career. I, like another person, want to be able to buy a flying car when they become available. But what I don't want is that flying car to hit me because the person sitting around that product design table didn't account for the texture of your hair or my hair or the color of our skin so that we will end up in an accident. And if we think that that is not a possibility, I just want everyone to put on Zoom. And the way, if you put on your blurred background on Zoom and I put on a blurred background on Zoom, to this day, it's 2023. I'm telling you, you and I will look radically different than a white person putting on Zoom because they have not accounted for your skin color and your hair texture and mine. So if you can't solve something as simple as that, how can I believe that you are pulling in representation and inclusion to other complex innovations, technologies, and services?
Mm-hmm. Wow. 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 Thank you for that really specific example. That really helps. And if people want to follow you, Aurora, if they work in corporate America, and they want to follow you. If they have their own businesses and they like what you're doing and they want to kind of like be like, how do I be like Aurora?
Yes.
how do they get more of you?
So please find us at, our website is very simple, theoptin.com. So that's theoptin.com. And I'm very active on LinkedIn. So find me at Aurora Archer on the LinkedIn platform and where I share a lot of my thoughts, ideas, and quite frankly, how all of us can be part of this evolution and change. It's going to take learning. It's going to take self-awareness, excavation, education, and the motivation to evolve the way we do our work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Aurora Archer, founder of The Opt-In, thank you for being with us today. And I look forward to our next conversation so we can talk about trees.
Yes, I cannot wait for us to talk about trees, you know, because I'm a big, you know, told you about my mama, told you about nature, and I have a fascination with trees. So
yes. Yes, yes, yes. So follow her.
Thank you
her.
For having me.
Yes, yes. And so we will see you on LinkedIn.
Yes, please. Aurora Archer at The Opt-In. Thank you so much. Appreciate you having me.
Wow. Isn't she lovely? Aurora Archer. Aurora Archer, the founder of The Opt-In. A woman on a mission. If you would like to stay in touch with Aurora, find out more about her, of course, you can go to her LinkedIn page, Aurora Archer, or check out theoptin.com for more information. And if you want to get some more support, if you want to find out a little bit more about, you know, being in community with us, then I invite you to check out the Mother Tree Network community. We are a community of mostly people who identify as women who are out here working with the natural world, with the intelligence of plants and our ancestors, who are rooted in love, who are standing for justice. So if that interests you, please go to my website, dramandakemp.com, and just look for Mother Tree Community. All right. Peace.